The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Welcome to another episode of Best Show Bests, the greatest hits of the best show, with me, your host, Tom Sharpling. If you like what you hear, make sure you join us every Tuesday night on Twitch at 6 p.m. Pacific for a brand new episode of the Best Show, featuring callers, celebrity guests, live music, and plenty of surprises. Enjoy! Now, Peyton Reed, director of Marvel's Ant-Man, tell me this. There's a thing that's been a secret history of the Best Show with you, going way back to the beginning of the Best Show, that no one has never been acknowledged publicly, I don't think. Has it?
I certainly have never acknowledged it publicly. Have you ever spoken about this?
No, I haven't.
Are we actually going to speak about this now? Is this
Should we? Happen? We might as well.
All right, so let's go back. The year must have been, what was it, 1998, 99?
No, probably would have been more like 2000, late 2000,
oh,
early
you're right.
2001.
You're exactly right, yes. I remember now. Do you want me to set it up?
Sure, why don't you set it up? You set it up.
All right, well, okay, so there had been a movie that had come out called Star Wars The Phantom Menace, the first of the prequel movies. There was a huge, as you remember, huge build-up to the movie coming out. People went out of their minds. Then people went and saw the movie, and I think it's safe to say that the majority of the audience might have been a little disappointed in the movie, but it didn't keep them from being rabid about Star Wars. In some ways, it only increased it, because then it was all this conjecture about what was going to happen in the later movies. I think was it after Phantom Menace, or was it after the second one?
I think it was after Phantom Menace, but the second one hadn't come out yet.
That's right. So there was all this conjecture about, I don't think the title had been announced.
No.
For the second one, is that right? Yeah. So
you called in.
I called into your show, and I told the audience that I was a disgruntled former employee at Lucasfilm. I was really pissed off because I left Lucasfilm under some very difficult circumstances, and I was going to share with the world all the secrets I knew about the upcoming Star Wars
the
movie.
You were the Star Wars insider. Because it got a lot of traction on these Star Wars message boards, and people were just I think this guy's
which
real.
Which is really my goal.
Yeah.
My goal. If you can get traction on a Star Wars message board, then you've really done it.
Yeah.
Then you're on the map.
Yeah. I think, and that did. It was so funny to see that get traction. And nobody knew. No, we've never said that was you until now, this many years later. 15 years later.
FMU, you're on the air.
Is it Tom?
Yes, it is.
Tom, hi, it's me.
Oh, hey, this is, it's 9:30, and this is the guest that I told you we're going to have. This is a guy. Now, you, I guess, obviously, you're going to remain nameless throughout.
Are we on the air, Tom?
Yeah, right now we are on the air, yes.
Oh, God, okay.
So, you wanted to remain nameless for the.
I do want to remain nameless for the reasons that I think that we had discussed before.
Okay, yeah. Which is, I guess, matters of
anonymity and just the stuff that I want to talk about. I think is that there could be repercussions to my giving out the information.
Okay, now. I guess we should explain this, because if anybody's just tuning in now, we have the guest on the program. you worked on the episode one of the Star Wars movies, The Phantom Menace.
I did. If you want me to set it up, I can do it this way.
Okay.
For your listeners out there, I worked on the latter part of Phantom Menace. I came on at the end of production and all through post-production.
Okay.
And I worked on episode two all through pre-production and through the shoot, through most of the shoot, and then was unceremoniously let go from the process.
Okay. Well, and now I can vouch for you the fact that I know you did work on the first and second movie.
Right.
But what capacity could you explain you were involved in the movie?
Well, without, I suppose, tipping too much of my identity, I was in the vaguest sense, I was an on-set assistant effects supervisor, but it's a job that requires a person to be on the set during the shooting of the film as a representative, as one of many representatives for Industrial Light and Magic, for the effects department to make sure that all the photography is lined up and we know what we're doing in terms of everything we need to put in the numerous post-production effects for the movie.
Okay. So so you joined the first movie in progress.
That's correct.
And then how deep into the second one did you get as a member of the crew?
Well, as I said, I was on for the entire prep period of episode two, and then probably for, I would say, three-quarters of the shooting at the new Fox studio in Australia before I was let go.
Okay, and why was it that you were let go from the making of the movie?
Well, Tom, I don't want to get into it too much, but I would say that just in the context of making a Star Wars movie, some opinions are valued more than others, and some aren't valued at all. And Star Wars is and always has been George Lucas's vision, and you know, it's either George's way or the highway, and I guess I got the highway, as it were. Mm-hmm. But I very much value the time that I worked on the films, and I know that there is a great desire on behalf of the fans to know things about episode two, and I respect that. And you know, I have this information, and you know, I'd love nothing more than to share some of it.
Okay.
As you can understand, mm-hmm. that I have to be very careful.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, why is it that you are feeling the need to do this? First of all, I guess. And why are you doing it with me?
I'm doing it with you because as I said, I know you, and there's so many rumors going around concerning this film as there were the last one,
mm-hmm.
and you know, as someone who experienced this firsthand, and also as a fan, I want to get a certain amount of information out there. Now, some of these things are, you know, what you would call spoilers if you're an internet fan. So if there's anyone who does not want to know information about the film, I urge them to turn off their radios.
Okay.
But for those of you who want information, as I know I would, I want to provide it. And frankly, you know, I've got nothing to lose, essentially.
Okay. Now, with episode two, I guess with episode one, it was a well-known thing that the actors and I guess people were only shown a couple pages of the script at a time, just on a need to know basis.
That's correct.
So how much of the story are you aware of or, you know, familiar with?
Well, I mean, this is the real question in the Star Wars universe. There are only a handful of people who have entire scripts. George Lucas, Rick McCallum, you know, only a few of the effects department heads. The rest of us get partial scripts. And then for certain purposes, there are script pages that are produced that are completely erroneous to sort of fan the flames of the Star Wars mania and send out intentionally incorrect material.
Now, did you come across things that were incorrect when you were working on episode one Did you, absolutely. I mean, so you got fake pages then.
But we always knew which ones were the fake pages. I always knew the fake pages. There's a very easy way to tell the fake pages from the real pages. I'm not going to go into that and tell you how you can do it, but there is a very easy
way. So you knew when you were getting pages that were just...
Absolutely. We knew the fake ones.
Now, was that something to maybe try to catch people leaking stuff? I mean, is that...
Yes.
So that's why they...
And people were let go for that very reason.
Okay. Now, so how much of episode 2 are you aware of?
Well, percentage-wise, I'm in terms of the overall story, I'm aware of quite a bit, and in terms of specific characters and things, and I, you know, obviously one of the great mysteries about the movie so far is what is this film titled? Episode 2, and you know, I think the front runner on the internet is Rise of the Empire, and that, of course, if anyone knows anything about Star Wars, is an erroneous title that was thrown out around the time of episode 1, before The Phantom Menace was the official title. Everyone thought it was called Fall of the Republic.
Mm-hmm.
Rise of the Empire is a title that is erroneous to people. I think some people think it's the title. I happen to know what the actual title is, at least as of the time I was let go.
Mm-hmm.
And if you like, that's one of the things I'd like to discuss tonight.
Well, you know, that's a huge bombshell for Star Wars fans, is what the title of episode 2 is. So, I mean, absolutely.
Well, it's probably, I think, the number one most coveted bit of episode 2 information. And the gist of this story, to sort of set it up, is, you know, episode 2 strikes this balance between a love story between Anakin and Amidala, and then the rise of the Sith Lords. All the drafts of the script, it changed. You know, it was always just called episode 2. I think in the last month of my involvement, a certain amount of pages were released with the title of Veil of the Sith.
Okay, so it's actually going to be Star Wars Veil of the Sith.
Star Wars episode 2, okay. Veil of the Sith.
Okay.
At one point, the title Hand of the Sith was thrown around, and that was incorrect, and the Jedi Nexus was one, but Veil of the Sith is the official title of Star Wars 2.
Okay, now I should, again, for anybody who's just joining the program, I have a guest who I guess you want to remain nameless, obviously.
Absolutely.
For the fact you worked on the episode 1 of the Star Wars movies and how much of three-quarters of episode
2? About three-quarters of, as I said, I worked on all of pre-production and about three-quarters of production of episode 2.
Okay, and then you're kind of leaking some stuff on this, which is kind of a coup. And, you know, I appreciate you doing this on this program, obviously. And
my relationship with you, which we won't go into again, mm-hmm. because I want to remain anonymous, but I want to do this for the show. And I also, you know, for my sake, I didn't, and not to say anything about your listenership, but I didn't want to do this in a giant grand gesture. I wanted to just sort of let it out there and in a sort of a smaller venue. Your show just seems to be the perfect way to do it.
Now,
because there are, you know, there would be major ramifications for me if this information was traced.
Yeah. Now, I guess you sign when you go to work for George Lucas and Lucasfilms on something that's kind of high security like this. You know, it's a top secret project. You must sign some sort of agreement that you're not going to do this.
Oh, absolutely. We all sign confidentiality agreements, and that's crucial to working on all of the movies.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
And those are obviously enforced.
Absolutely they are. There's no stronger legal team than the Lucasfilm Limited legal team. And these are, we're not just talking about a slap on the hand. We're talking about serious fines and penalties.
Mm-hmm. So why are you breaching your agreement that you signed with them?
Well, quite frankly, because my agreement was breached. I had an employment agreement with Lucasfilm Limited. And to my mind, if they were not willing to live up to the agreement that they signed with me, why should I live up to the agreement I signed with them?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Tom, I don't want to make this about sour grapes or about revenge or anything. I am in the position I'm in, and I have no one to blame for that but me. But a byproduct of that is that I do have this information. I know that there's a demand for it out there, and I want to let people know.
So is this sort of, but are you, this is vaguely kind of a revenge type thing for you, in a way. I mean, that has to factor into it somewhat.
Well, I mean, if any star, anything a Star Wars fan knows is that revenge has no place in the Star Wars universe. Mm-hmm. It was Return of the Jedi, not Revenge of the Jedi. So yeah. Revenge goes against the code of the Jedi, and I don't think that I've fully gone to the dark side or anything. I mean, I feel like this is, you know, I'm not showing people the movie, and I'm not going to tell everything about the movie that I know, but I'm just going to tell a few things that I think would whet people's appetites for the movie. And I mean, it, to my way of thinking, there's no better advertising for the movie than for people to know this stuff.
To get some details.
Yeah.
No, I guess, well, why don't you give us something else? I mean, what else is like an exciting...
Well, as I said, the title is I think, a biggie. And I know there was a lot of controversy when the actual title, The Phantom Menace, came out. Oh, that's a fake title. There's no way. And I think it's a great title. But Veil of the Sith, I also think, I mean, it is a great title too, because it really does seem to sum up what this movie's about. The other thing I would say about this movie, and I know there's been a lot of stuff. You tell me the things that you'd want to know. People ask, I think they want to know about Jar Jar Binks. They want to know about this relationship between Amidala and Anakin Skywalker. The thing that I can say about that aspect of the movie. And the movie in general, at the stage that I've seen the film and pieces of the film and what I witnessed on set, the level of violence and even, I would say, the sexual content of this movie is actually much more explicit than I ever thought you'd see in a Star Wars movie. Now, granted, the movie, you know, will be PG or PG-13. There's no doubt it'll be PG-13.
Yeah, absolutely. But
some of the stuff I saw, and I know that that's sort of the way of filmmaking, you go as far as you can go, and you can always take it back in the editing room. But some of the stuff they were shooting was really, I think, will be will be quite. Star Wars fans will be really happy to see that this is not the tone of the Phantom Menace.
Okay, because a lot of people were unhappy with the fact they thought it was. That it was vaguely infantilized.
Well, that was really the prevailing thought about that first movie, and they were absolutely right. And one thing I will say, in George Lucas's defense, he does listen to the fans, and he did react very. I think George Lucas was very surprised at the negative reaction that the Jar Jar Binks character got in the first film.
Mm-hmm.
Is he rectifying that for this film? You bet he is. Absolutely.
Really?
And the Jar Jar Binks that you're going to see in this film, as we know, 10 years have passed since the Phantom Menace.
Okay.
And the Jar Jar Binks that we see in this movie is a more serious, more mature Jar Jar. He's, you know, now a security officer for the Naboo, for the Queen. And, you know, in certain scenes, he's Anakin's sidekick. But it's a much more... It's a grittier version of Jar Jar Binks, and as ridiculous as that sounds, I am telling you, it is, and I think the fans will be pleased about that.
Now, you've worked pretty much, you worked with George Lucas throughout the process, like you were...
Well, a great deal of the time we were with, there were different units. There's the main unit, there's a second unit, a B and a C unit. I was with the effects units for part of the time, but this is... a movie in which there are effects in every single shot of the film. So we were with Lucas's unit for a great deal of the time.
So what is he like to work with?
An absolute control freak.
Okay. Which I guess isn't surprising, but he's, I mean, is he, he's
are
so...
Are you asking me, is he a nice man?
Is he a nice man?
Well, I could probably count the number of full-blown conversations I had with him on one finger. But,
wow.
He knows what he wants.
Okay. So.
But I will say again, in his defense, my feeling, and I think the feeling of a lot of the other crew people involved, is that he's listening more to other people on this film. He didn't leave the job of writing the movie to himself. But the most important thing is I was privy to a conversation. Francis Coppola, who is a great longtime friend of George Lucas, came to the set one day, and I was privy to a conversation between the two of them where they were discussing, Coppola was discussing, this whole sort of breed of younger filmmakers, Quentin Tarantino, Paul Thomas Anderson, these guys, and the great energy and the grittiness that they had in their films. And I have to say that in the footage in this movie, there is that influence. I mean, it is a much grittier film than the word gritty doesn't even apply to Phantom Menace.
No, absolutely not. Well, when you say gritty, I mean, I almost can't even picture a gritty Star Wars, anything gritty about.
Well, I'll have to say this. There's nothing gritty about Star Wars, but if you go back to Episode 4, A New Hope, and you conjure up images of Obi-Wan Kenobi slicing off a guy's arm in the cantina, or Uncle Owen and Aunt Beru lying scorched on the sand after the stormtrooper attack,
okay. That
stuff is gritty.
Yeah, okay.
In comparison. And let me tell you, the stuff that I've seen, some of the scenes that I've worked on, effects-wise, were far grittier than that.
Which is surprising, I guess, because that would be kind of a 180 for Lucas, because he went back and meddled with the first three movies
and actually sort of tried to nice it up.
Yeah, like he took.
Well, let me tell you what I believe the deal is. I think that he got so much flack about nicing up the first one that in a way he's going in the other direction. I mean, don't forget that this is the guy who, with Spielberg, was the man who ushered in the PG-13 rating in the first place. It was 1984. It was Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom, and they had a guy sticking a hand in a guy's chest and pulling out a beating heart, and this was the image that conjured in PG-13, and this is the same guy. I mean, he first and foremost wants to stay on the cutting edge, and I think at the time of Phantom Menace, he was out of touch with youth culture. Now, in the time between the first one, in Phantom Menace and this one,
okay.
I think he's caught up somewhat. I think he's very aware of the way that violence has made its way into youth culture a lot more. I think he's very aware of the way that sex has become a bigger deal for teens. Movies like Road Trip and American Pie and whatever, which you wouldn't think to apply to the Star Wars universe, but the love scenes... The scenes between Amidala and Anakin in this movie, at least what they've shot. Now, I can't tell you that's going to actually make it into the final cut.
Okay.
It's racy stuff.
Seriously?
Yes.
Wow. That is probably the biggest shock that you could mention in conjunction with anything that's in the
Star
Wars
franchise.
Well,
I'm not going to tip everything, but I will say this. Bear in mind the notion that this Anakin Skywalker is 10 years older than the one we saw in Phantom Menace.
Yeah.
It is a romance. This movie is a love story between the two, so we see their relationship evolving. At the same time, Tom, Anakin Skywalker is turning over to the dark side of the Force.
Okay.
These things are not separate. They relate to each other. So if you can imagine a story arc where a normal relationship is evolving between these two people, and then take that and understand that he's succumbing to the Dark Lords of the Sith, and that's affecting his relationship in very negative, sometimes violent ways. It's really interesting stuff, and very dark.
Mm-hmm. Now, would you be willing to maybe take a phone call if somebody had a question?
Absolutely.
Okay. Well, actually, the phones have been flashing, so why don't we take a call? FMU, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi.
Hello?
Hello.
Are you there?
Can you hear me?
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Hi. I have several questions.
Okay.
Can the caller confirm any of the rumors that Mr. Lucas withheld food from certain crew members?
I'm sorry, Tom. What was that?
Can you hear the caller?
I think. Did he say withholding food from crew members?
Yes. I think I read that in movie line.
Well, I think what this caller, Tom, is referring to, I think that's an exaggeration of what actually happened. There was an incident the first month of shooting at the new Fox Studios, and the studio is literally a new studio. It was just built by Fox in an attempt to sort of save costs. It's in Australia. There was a lot of trouble with the food service there, and it became sort of a joke on set that if you did something to piss off Lucas or the movie that day, they were going to withhold your food. I think that's what he's referring to. But,
okay. So it's kind of something that got blown out of proportion. It's obviously somebody picks it up and runs with it.
That's right. And that's the kind of sort of fan rumor that that's ridiculous. And, you know, what I'm trying to provide tonight is actual details from the movie. Mm-hmm. And I think that, I mean, I think that sort of illustrates the case that that's ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
But thank you, caller.
Thank you, caller.
Sure, sure. Hey, I have more questions.
Okay, one more question because we got to keep moving. We got other calls coming in.
I want to know how the death of DeForest Kelly will affect this next episode.
Okay, Tom, I don't. Let's go to another call. That's
Star Trek. Okay, FMU, you're on the air.
Connected by 1-800-5.
Wow, what was that?
I
don't know. Well, so again, just for anybody tuning in now, we have somebody who was a crew member of Episode 1 of the Star Wars movies and most of Episode 2, and you were let go.
That's right.
And now you're kind of using this as a forum to maybe fill in some details of the great mystery surrounding Episode 2 of the Star Wars franchise.
Yeah, I mean, there's been a lot of talk, but I think that there's some really interesting stuff going on. I mean, you know, for longtime Star Wars fans, you're going to get to see R2-D2 and C-3PO back on Owen Lars' moisture farm. We're going to see all that again.
Okay.
Uncle Owen, a much younger Uncle Owen, is a character in this movie, as is his wife, Beru.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to see Boba Fett back, along with the other Fetts, Jango Fett and Boba Fett. There's a whole group of Mandalorian army. I don't want to get into that, but there are a bunch of new characters.
Now, I guess Boba Fett is a huge fan favorite of the Star Wars franchise.
Absolutely,
so,
he is.
So I guess that's kind of his concession. That's also more of a gritty character within the, because I guess people like the fact that he was a loner, and he.
Well, bear in mind the Boba Fett that you know from The Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi was a loner. In this universe, you're going to see the entire gamut of the Fetts. There was more than one. There was, as I mentioned, there's Jango Fett, who's a major character in this movie. There's Ambu Fett. There's also Boba Fett. But you're going to see, you're going to be introduced to the Mandalorians, and that's a whole other thing that we can get into another time. But you know, you're going to start to see. There's a lot of talk about everyone's in the first Star Wars or Episode 4. They refer to the Clone Wars.
Yeah.
You're going to see that. You're going to start to see clone troopers in this film. There's a whole new group of bounty hunters, Zamwazel, a female bounty hunter. A lot of new interesting planets and places, an amazing battle in the rain. There's tons of stuff in this film, as you can imagine. You're going to see an amazing battle in the rain between Obi-Wan Kenobi and Jango Fett, which I can go into, but
sure. I mean, if anything you can.
Well, I think, you know, obviously Ewan McGregor is back as Obi-Wan Kenobi. He's now sporting the Alec Guinness beard, and for those of you who may have been upset about the lack of Jedi fighting action in Phantom Menace, you're going to more than make up for it in this film. Mm-hmm. The fight scenes in this film are unbelievable. Mm-hmm. The things that I've seen so far.
Now, another question, I guess. Going back to Jar Jar Binks, I guess, do you have any awareness? I guess, you know, when Jar Jar Binks came out, people complained not only about the fact that it was silly, but they also complained about the. Some people inferred that it was vaguely racist in terms of this kind of like
absolutely
Jamaican thing and him just doing kind of like a Jamaican accent, and also people were speculating that Jar Jar Binks was gay, which.
I think that's all ridiculous. Mm-hmm. I think that George has addressed the notion that people were annoyed by Jar Jar Binks as to whether the character was overtly racist. I don't think he puts too much stock in that kind of criticism. Mm-hmm.
Why don't we take another call here? And
sure.
The phone number is 201-200-9368. We're answering or fielding questions from someone who worked on the Phantom Menace and the upcoming Star Wars movie. FMU, you're on the air.
Connected by 1-800-5.
Come on. Hold on. Mm-hmm. FMU, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi. I think we got cut off.
Okay.
I've also been hearing a lot about product placement in this new episode, specifically Doritos and Lemon Pledge. And I wanted to know if the caller could confirm or deny this.
Well, that just sounds...
There are no Doritos and there's no Lemon Pledge in the new Star Wars movie.
Okay, again, that sounds just... that. See, that's just, I guess, where fandom kind of gets weird, where people just believe anything anybody tells them.
Yeah, Tom, I don't know if there are any actual Star Wars fans who listen to your show, mm-hmm. and maybe this was...
Well, here's another call. FMU, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hello.
I'd like to find out, is there truth in the fact that, truth in the idea that there's going to be a young Boba Fett?
Well, obviously, he's younger than the Boba Fett that you meet up with later in The Empire Strikes Back, yes.
But it's not going to be a child, though.
He's not a child.
Okay.
No.
And how does he deal with, I noticed in a lot of recent George Lucas work, there's a lot of comedic elements.
I think that the attempt here in this second movie in Veil of the Sith is to create a story that is more of a love story. It's a love story, and it also starts to get darker. So I do think that the sort of humorous elements, you're probably referring to some of the fart jokes and things in Phantom Menace.
Well, also, Jar Jar himself.
And Jar Jar Binks. I would say that, let me just say this, with Jar Jar and that character, I think there's an attempt to tone it down. There are some other characters there's a character in the film called Dexter Jetster who owns a place called Dexter's Diner. That, to my mind, is going to be probably the most controversial character in Veil of the Sith.
In what way?
Because he is designed, to my mind, he is a classic example of a character in the George Lucas universe who is designed almost exclusively for comic relief.
Okay. So which I guess is he'll never escape that entirely, putting a character who you know is going to lighten
sadly,
the tone.
No, I don't know why he and frankly, Tom, this is probably one of the reasons that I was let go from the organization. I may have been too vocal about my opinions about the characters in the Star Wars universe because I love them. I love those characters. I have strong feelings about them, and when you're there making the movie and you start to get in your head that maybe I can affect this for the better, it's very hard to hold back your opinions about these characters because they're real.
Mm-hmm.
And I may have said things that offended Mr. Lucas, or I may have said things that he took the wrong way, but for better or for worse, I, as a Star Wars fan and not just an employee, feel strongly about those things.
Yeah, you have a stake in it. You came into it with probably what
Let
I guess...
Let me ask you this.
Uh-huh.
And it's a question that people have asked over the... people ask a hypothetical question. If you could go back in time and have access to Adolf Hitler and have killed him, would you have done that? Well, it's similar in the sense that if you could have gone back in time and been on the set and talked him out of creating Jar Jar Binks, would you have done it? Would I have done it? You're damn right I would.
Yeah, absolutely. I think a lot of people would agree with you. Now, caller, do you have any other questions for our guest?
I have to say, though, I agree with what he's saying because I used to love, C-3PO. In the beginning, he was sort of just a little bit of comic relief, but as time went on and with Return of the Jedi happened, he was just an incredibly insane, just he wouldn't say anything straight. Also, Han Solo, that character became a joke. Everything that came out of his mouth.
Right, and do you know, with that attitude, you would have been fired from Lucasfilm too.
Well, thank you for calling.
Thank you.
Thanks. The number is 201-200-9368. And I should make mention you're listening to WFMU East Orange, WXHD Mount Hope, worldwide on the internet at WFMU.org. We're taking calls regarding the upcoming Star Wars Episode 2. We have a cast member, a crew member. You were let go, and you're letting our audience in on certain details.
Yeah.
Okay, let's take another call here. FMU, you're on the air.
Hey, how you doing?
All right. Hey, could you turn your radio down, please?
Sorry about that.
That's all right.
I just got a question about Yoda. If he's, I heard that he's doing a fight scene. Is that true?
You will absolutely see Yoda. That was another complaint from Phantom Menace. People wanted to see Yoda wielding a lightsaber. You will definitely see that. You'll see scenes from the Jedi training trials. They always speak to the trials that a Padawan has to take to become a Jedi Knight. You'll see that in this film. You'll see Yoda presiding over the trials. And you'll also get to see Yoda toward the end of the film in full-on Jedi fight glory.
Wow.
It's really great stuff. And I think it's some of the best stuff that and again, I'd only seen some of the early effect stuff, but it's some of the best stuff I've seen ILM do.
Now, is that something that's going to look maybe, or is there a fear of that looking silly at this point, since people are used to a different Yoda?
Well, understand this is a younger Yoda more in his prime than he is in Empire Strikes Back or Return of the Jedi. So as to whether it's silly, let's just say it's odd looking.
What about Mace Windu?
Mace Windu is back. He has a larger role than he did in Phantom Menace.
Yeah, that's a good question. Thank you.
He makes it through. Sam Jackson makes it through this movie. He will also appear in Episode 3.
And his character takes on a larger role in the movie.
Absolutely. And I will say this, a quite unexpected role.
Okay. I know you don't want to give everything away.
No, I really don't. I don't. Because okay. I am a fan and I want to keep some things.
Yeah.
Secret as
okay,
well.
Okay. Any more questions, caller?
No, that'd be it. Thanks a lot.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
All right, good night. Another call coming in. FMU, you're on the air.
Hi, I'm calling to talk to your Star Wars guy.
Okay.
And I got a question for him.
Sure.
Should I hold on or what's
No, it? Absolutely. No, can you hear him?
Oh, okay. I'm on the air?
Absolutely.
Yeah, my name is Millard Capps, and I am directing a documentary for Mr. Lucas on the making of Episode 2.
What company do you work for?
Hello?
What company do you work for?
Oh, I work for a company that is based in Marin County.
You'll have to do better than that.
Well, you'll have to do better than some of your answers, because, frankly, I haven't come across you on this, and I'm a little confused
this
on exactly what your role is on the production. I tuned in
Tom,
a little late.
This guy's a fake.
Well, can you just explain to the what was your role on the film?
Fake, Tom.
Okay.
I was contracted by Lucasfilm to make a documentary on the making of Episode 2.
And where are you?
Unbelievably tight security around this documentary.
You've been shooting a documentary on Episode 2?
On digital video, yes, we have.
And where were you shooting?
Where were we shooting?
Yeah.
I'm not allowed to say anything about the production. And
okay, Tom.
Anyone who worked on
fake.
It respects Mr. Lucas.
Tom,
knows the severest consequences come from this type of disinformation, mm-hmm. which you seem to be perpetuating.
Well, we've already talked about that.
What's your question,
caller? I tuned in late. What was your role on the, and I forget your name, so I tuned in
well,
late.
Well, you don't know my name, and that's the whole point, but the point of it is I don't think you've been listening to this show, and Tom.
What is your name?
He said he's not going to give his name out. That was part of the stipulation for him to come on the program in the first place.
Okay,
What is your question, caller?
I'm going to say a phrase to you, and your response, I think, will clear things up for me. Orange ballast.
Orange ballast?
Does that mean anything to you?
No, and it doesn't mean anything to you either.
It means a lot.
Tom, get rid of this call.
I think we have a fraud going on here. I'm sorry. Yeah.
Look, I'm not sure who it is. I do know this guy, and I can vouch for him because he's a guest on my program, and he's also a friend. Sir, can you turn down your radio, please? Yes.
I don't have a radio on here.
Well, I'm getting an.
Tom, this guy's not even smart enough to turn down his radio.
Okay, but I can vouch. I can.
You don't need to take that tone, sir.
I can.
I'm trying to figure out exactly where this is coming from, because you seem to have a lot of information which perhaps has been left out of my documentary, or you're out of your mind. I'm just trying to figure out which one it is.
I personally can vouch for my guest.
Okay, so Tom, to me, the onus of proof is on this guy. If you've done a documentary on Episode 2. Why don't you give us a Star Wars secret that we don't know about?
All right, here's a secret, and it's not a secret. It's a fact. I'm not supposed to say anything. I'm not allowed to say anything, and I have great respect for the project, and I'm not going to say anything.
Okay,
and
then we
like
have
you,
no way of knowing that,
hurt,
that you're truthful. You're telling the truth.
Excuse me?
Okay, let's assume for a second that you are a documentarian, that you did do it. Why are you calling? What's your question?
My question is, why are you doing this? I'm trying to protect. I have a vested interest. When my documentary comes out, it's going to answer a lot of questions a lot of people have. It's going to be very exciting for a lot of people. And frankly, you're creating confusion for my audience and, frankly, what I believe to be disinformation. I mean, this is my life's work. I'm documenting exactly what's happening. I'm not blabbing it away on a radio station for my
own. If you're truly doing a documentary on Episode 2, Your documentary is going to come out when the movie is ready to be promoted, and it's going to reveal the secrets at the time George Lucas wants you to reveal the secrets, and that's not what I'm doing. I'm doing something different, okay? I worked on the movie, and
what department did you work in?
We've already gone through this, Tom, and as I said, I don't want anyone knowing my identity. That's the whole point of this. It's anonymous, and if this guy is trying to convince me that he did a documentary on episode 2, he's wrong. He didn't. And I'll tell you why, because if you were, he'd still be up there doing the documentary because they're posting. They're a year and a half away from release.
Mm-hmm.
Where are you calling from, sir?
Lucas Ranch.
You're calling from Lucas Ranch.
Tell me what road that's on, right, sir?
Well, how are you hearing the program? Are you listening on the internet?
Yes, of course. I mean, I got a call from the main office that this was going on. They know about this. I mean, they track this.
Tom, this guy's bluffing.
Okay, I got to say, I know my guest, and I don't know you, sir, and I've got to go with the guy I know.
He doesn't even have a question.
Okay, thank you for calling, though.
He doesn't even have a question. Okay. Tom, can I just reiterate one
mm-hmm.
thing?
Absolutely.
I don't know if we have any other more calls, but
yes, there's a couple more people.
I am doing this for the fans. The fans want the information. You log onto the internet, you go to any given website, there's so much conjecture about this film. I'm just throwing things out there, tidbits, nothing that's going to spoil the mm-hmm. movie for people.
Exactly, and I have to say, to your credit, you've given things that as a fan of the movie franchise, which I am, you've whet my appetite and you've got me thinking, but you haven't revealed like plot twists.
And believe me, Tom, I've got information about the movie that would spoil things for viewers mm-hmm. that I could give away and that I may give away, but I don't mm-hmm. choose to now, and maybe I will later in the show. It depends mm-hmm. on how I feel, but the point is, it's my prerogative, and I think you asked before, am I doing this out of revenge? No, I'm doing this because I'm a fan.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no one more excited about seeing Vale of the Sith than I am.
Mm-hmm. Well, why don't we take another call?
Sure.
FMU, you're on the air.
Hi. I was just wondering if there was going to be any other characters that were going to show up from the original series, like Han Solo.
No, you won't see Han Solo or Chewbacca in either of these, not in Episode 2 or Episode 3. You will see... you'll see the birth of Luke Skywalker at the end of Episode 3, but that's about it. You'll see, as I said, Boba Fett will be here. There are a couple of peripheral characters. You know, you'll get even more of the Hutts. The Hutts play a very specific role. Jabba of the Hutt and his organization. They play a very significant role in Episodes 2 and 3.
Okay. All right.
Also, it's odd, sort of, in the way that regular history would go, you go from manpower doing warfare and it would move towards more automated forms of warfare.
Your point is backwards in the Star Wars universe.
Right. You have robots and they transform into stormtroopers, which were men in armor.
Right.
Do you see that transformation at all?
Absolutely. There are going to be new... the designs for this are amazing. There were battle droids in Phantom Menace. There are new battle droids in Episode 2. Again, it's 10 years later. There are new battle droids. And then one of the things this gets into with the Clone Wars is, and I think that's a very smart comment, Tom, that our
caller brought. Yeah, that actually is something interesting if you think about the timeline.
Right, because one of the things, you know, the backstory of this is that Darth Sidious and the Sith Lords are taking over the Republic. And one of the things there is that... thematically, that the human life, or in this universe, organic life, becomes devalued. So that now we'll see these new battle droids, but you also start to see clone troopers, and then it becomes a question of what is organic and what is machine. And there's a very smart thing that happens at the end of Episode 2 that will start to foreshadow why, in the original Star Wars trilogy, we see stormtroopers and who are people in armor.
So this movie seems like it might also have some more thought-provoking and intelligent themes running through it.
I think it is a smarter film. As I said, it is absolutely a more violent film.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I'll say honestly, based on scenes, if they were to string together a cut of the movie now with scenes that I worked on and that are in there, this movie would get an R rating.
You mean as is now, full on, if they put everything in...
Absolutely, because mm-hmm. I think I mentioned or I foreshadowed before, Tom, this relationship between Amidala and Anakin Skywalker, and that you see them in very romantic situations, and toward the end of the film, as he starts to, I'm starting to get worried about revealing too many.
Well, anything you're not comfortable with, please don't.
Well, I'll just say in the vaguest sense that there is a battle in episode two that Anakin Skywalker emerges as a hero.
Okay.
And the fact that he starts to get cocky and the dark side starts to take over manifests itself in his relationship with Amidala. And if there's anything approaching, obviously it sounds ridiculous to say that there is a rape scene in a Star Wars movie, but the footage that I've seen of this comes damn close to that.
That's insane. You've got to be kidding.
No.
No. Wow. See, that sounds like that would be the influence of people like you were saying of I guess Coppola having Lucas's ear, which they've always had a relationship. Well, let's keep taking calls. People are really really interested in this.
All right.
FMU, you're on the air.
Yeah, I was wondering if you knew anything about Jet Li playing Boba Fett.
Jet Li was considered at one point, but Jet Li is not in this film.
I guess Jet Li is probably busy doing the Matrix movies, which
right.
I heard he was doing. I guess they're filming both.
They're shooting 2 and 3 Matrix back-to-back, and I don't believe they've actually started photography.
Okay. All right. Any more questions?
I guess you're not going to see really anything of Darth Vader yet, though, in this second movie.
In terms of the costume that we're all used to?
Yeah.
No, that would be 3.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye. FMU, you're on the air.
Hi, guys. Happy holidays.
Happy holidays to you.
Okay. Here's a couple things about episode one that I had problems with. First of all, I'm a strong believer in characters. Like, you guys stole a little bit of my thunder when you mentioned about the characters. I really think that movies are like 75% character, and if you don't have anything else, you better
Absolutely.
Have something.
Yeah.
You know? And I really didn't find them engaging at all. I mean, I loved the first two movies, here's the problem. I really didn't like Jedi a lot, and I think that there was kind of a drop off. I mean, it was a long time in between the films, and I think Lucas probably was out of the loop for a while. There's a drop off, and I think that he also probably pandered to the audience and worried more about what they would like instead of just doing the films like he did the first two.
Right.
And I think that, I
so
don't know.
Did you have a question about episode two?
I'm sorry?
Did you have a question about episode two?
No. I just wanted to mention, like, I'm kind of worried about episode two. I have a feeling it's not going to be much better.
Well,
than
if you're
one.
Worried about taking your kids to see it because of maybe some sexual content or some
no, I don't have
violent
exactly.
content.
I'm just worried
I,
about
I,
it's
I might,
not
there
be
might
good.
Be concern.
But you're saying that as a fan, if you're a fan of Star Wars, say you're you know, in your early 30s, where I guess a lot of people are when they grew up on it,
right?
Saw it in the theater, saw all three movies in
yep.
the theater. You have certain elements that you respond to that you felt, I guess maybe the third movie and then the fourth one, kind of they put by the wayside. So now my guess, do you feel that is? Those are issues that will be addressed. I mean, will fans who look at Star Wars and then Empire Strikes Back as the definitive, mm-hmm. those are the two best in the series, will those fans be happy?
I don't think so. I really think
Well, I'm asking my guest. I think he has a better idea than either you or I have.
I think I noticed most of the people who really like episode one tend to be younger,
uh-huh.
tend to be teenagers mm-hmm. and younger. And
I think this movie's going to surprise
really...
a lot of people. Uh-huh.
So you think that those people will be happy?
I think the young people will.
Well, no, you
no,
weren't
I
working
think,
on the movie. I'm just asking the guest.
I think some of the older fans are going to be pleased with the amount of violence and the amount of sex in a Star Wars movie.
I think
it's going to completely take people off base. Mm-hmm. And those who know George Lucas, they know that if nothing else, he's one of the most calculated people in terms of making money and marketing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but I don't think that's what's going to – I don't think the people like our age in the 30s are going to be really care about that. They really – what made Star Wars so special was the characters. People love the characters. The first two movies were lovable, especially
Yoda. I think that the character stuff between Anakin Skywalker and Queen Amidala is really good character stuff. Mm-hmm. True, they're going to be a lot of – they're surrounded by a lot of CG characters and puppets, and you take that – you take the good with the bad.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, thanks for calling.
All right, thank you.
Thank you. FMU, you're on the
you
air.
Have a call connected by 1-8.
Okay. Don't seem that line does not seem to be working. Well, now do you? I guess another question would be, you know, I guess a lot of people growing up on the movies, they're looking for those elements of the balance between, like, the thrilling aspects of it, kind of like the, you know, the comic book serial type action, combined with the mysticism of the Star Wars movies. Is that the balance that this seems to be striking? Does it have the classic balance?
I think so, but I would venture to say it's darker.
Okay. Dark in the way that Empire Strikes Back was dark, or even darker than that?
I'd say darker than that.
Wow. So that's and does this seem to be something that maybe the merchandising is not going to be as full on as
you always have the merchandising. Mm-hmm. There's, you know, as we know, Lucas is relentless with the merchandising.
Yeah.
That's how he's built his empire. And I think one of the other most asked questions are, when are the movies coming out on DVD? And I have some news about that too.
Wow. See, that actually, I'd say between the title of the movie, which is Veil of the Sith, you let us know, and the fact that people have...
Tom, that's confirmed. That okay. is the title of the movie, Veil
okay.
of the Sith.
And the fact that the DVDs, I guess, is a great mystery, because everybody felt shortchanged when Phantom Menace only came out on VHS, and when they just recently re-released a package of the first, you know, episode 4, 5, and 6 with, you know, I guess 2 minutes of episode 2 information on it.
Which is barely information.
Yeah, it seemed so. I guess people feel shortchanged by the lack of DVD product for Star Wars. Now, you have information on that?
Well, yeah, and they feel shortchanged. But you know what happens is they feel shortchanged for about 5 minutes, and they write something about it on the internet, and they run out and they buy the VHS. And as soon as they've all bought the VHS, then Lucasfilm will announce the release date of a DVD, and they'll all go out and buy that. Mm-hmm. And you know what? Lucasfilm has twice as much money that way.
Yeah. Now, what do you know about
the way? And I got to say, for a man who makes so much money, the fact that I was treated the way that I was treated,
Now, were you to, is your thing over? You've alluded to the fact that it was over creative direction.
It was over creative direction. Well, no, it wasn't.
You're making.
I don't expect George Lucas, who's George Lucas, to accept every idea that I have on the set of a movie. But when I have a great idea and there's a lot of people backing me on the set, I gave the analogy before about if you could kill Hitler, would you do it?
Mm-hmm.
And if you could kill Jar Jar Binks or keep him from being creative, would you do it? You would. Well, that's how I felt on the set. I mean, you can imagine if you're there and you see something.
So there's a character. Is there a character in this that you mentioned? The guy who you said you thought was just for comic relief.
There's a character in this movie named Dexter Jetser.
Mm-hmm.
And he owns Dexter's Diner, which is a space diner. And I don't know if you're a fan of Battlestar Galactica. I'm not.
Not really, no.
But, or if you're a fan of shows like Buck Rogers or Quark. But I'm telling you, that's what this brought to mind. And when I voiced my opinion about it in a very political way, you know...
You were not... Your opinion was not favored. They were not looking for your voice in the mix.
Yeah, but you know what? I'm going to be vindicated, Tom.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Why don't we take another call here? FMU, you're on the air.
Hi, what can you tell me about the development of Anakin's mother?
You're going to get much more of that in episode 3.
Okay.
So you don't see her at all in episode 2?
No, you will see her in episode 2, definitely, because we do go back to Tatooine, and she does play an important role in this, but you're going to see her more at, you'll see her more at the end of 2 and at the beginning of 3.
Okay.
Okay, and are there any huge battle scenes with, you know, hundreds of lightsabers going?
I think when you see the scenes in the Clone Wars in this film, you'll be very, very pleased.
Okay.
Okay.
I think you'll also be pleased at the Rain battle between Obi-Wan Kenobi and Jango Fett.
Okay.
That's all I can say.
Okay.
Okay. Great. Thank you. Another call, FMU. You're on the air.
Hey, what's going on, guys?
How you doing?
I have two questions.
Sure.
First, I want to bring up the rumor, this is a couple months ago, mm-hmm. about Christopher Walken being one of the Sith. Now, as far as I hear now, there's no truth to it, but was there any truth to it?
Christopher Walken shot 2 days on the film, at least 2 days while I was there. Now, Lucas has a habit of bringing actors back in post-production after he's done some editing and figures out additional stuff. He did shoot 2 days on the film. If it ends up in the film, because there have been some other name actors who've shown up and done one-day roles, and some of them were successful and some of them weren't, and the reason they weren't successful in some cases were the effect that they're trying with some of these characters has never been done before. The first couple of passes at it didn't work, and they weren't to anyone's satisfaction. But, and again, I don't want to talk too much about what this effect is and what it represents, but the Jedi at a point in the last third of this movie are fighting an enemy that is something that we haven't seen effects-wise, and it's very, very hard to describe. But the Christopher Walken footage was involved in that, and there were other people besides Christopher Walken who came in and did work on that. There was also, and this is probably the strangest, we know that George Lucas has always been a fan of Kurosawa, and there's actually some, and Tom, this may be too much, but there is an homage to some of the Kurosawa stuff with the actor Toshiro Mifune, who, of course, is dead. But through the magic of film technology, he appears, or at least when I was involved, he appears briefly in this film.
Really? So what, is it like a CGI version of a Toshiro Mifune?
It's taking existing footage of Toshiro Mifune and manipulating it in a way that he appears in a major scene in this movie. It's one scene only. He's in a scene, and he's speaking English, which Toshiro Mifune, with the possible exception of 1941, never did in a film.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And I cannot say anything more about it.
See, that's the kind of move that I guess it's either it's an homage, but it could be the kind of thing that backfires.
Well,
and I guess
we'll see.
Okay.
Wow.
My other
question was a couple weeks ago on Entertainment Tonight, they were talking to Sam Jackson about Unbreakable, mm-hmm. and they asked him about Episode 2, and he said for a couple days he was in front of a green screen.
Right.
And they asked about the fight scene, and he said basically Lucas just said, go in front of it, take your lightsaber, and just swing.
Right.
Now,
well,
I can understand if you're joking about it, but that sounds really sloppy.
Well, it's not, and I'll tell you why. Because the thing that they're fighting in the last third of this film is tied into that effect I was just talking about. And I think he doesn't want to reveal what that effect is, but let me assure you, it's something that you've never, ever seen before.
Wow.
All right.
Okay. All right. Thanks.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Another call here. FMU, you're on the air.
Hey, Tom.
Yes.
First off, I just want to say tonight this truly is the best show on FMU.
Oh, thank you. Is this stuff you're interested in?
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, well, I appreciate it. Do you have a question for the guest?
I certainly do. I have two questions, actually. Mm-hmm. The first question is, I don't know if this has been brought up yet, but they're breaking in new digital technology. They're not shooting the movie on film.
That's right.
I'm curious to know if that's gone well, if they've had any problems with that.
They're shooting on a new 24-frame digital video. It's a high-def video that was developed over 6 years between Sony and Panavision. And this technology, I will say this, that it finally works. I will also say, and Tom, this may be the biggest secret that I've given away and the one that may come along with it, the biggest repercussions.
Okay.
There was 3 weeks of principal photography that was scrapped.
Really? At what point?
The first 3 weeks of shooting.
Okay.
Because of this technology.
Okay.
I think that all the things have been resolved. But during that 3 weeks, there was script writing going on. So the interesting thing is the technical problems were fixed
mm-hmm.
without a hitch. But the interesting thing is that in the time that 3 weeks of footage was shot, there were some pretty major script changes as they were writing during production. So that means that there is going to exist somewhere 3 weeks worth of footage that may not correlate whatsoever to the final film that you see. And I have a suspicion that this footage is going to become somewhat of a holy grail for Star Wars fanatics
mm-hmm.
in the years to
okay.
come.
Okay. All right.
And I actually have a wee bit of that footage in my possession.
Wow. And what type of stuff was that? I know you probably don't want to get too specific, but
it's stuff actually with a character that they were trying to introduce that was a largely CG character that didn't work in addition to the technical problems of the camera, and they decided to scrap for that reason. And it will be the only known footage of that character, because that character has been completely eliminated from the film.
Okay, great. Well, thanks for calling.
Sure. Hey, I got one more question. Sure.
Okay.
I have actually heard other information on the film from other inside sources, who I don't want to name, but they are actually sort of name people.
Mm-hmm.
And I had heard something that surprised me, and I don't want to blab it out on the air, but I understand that one of the supporting, I'm hoping perhaps your mystery caller can confirm or deny it.
Mm-hmm.
I had heard that one of the supporting characters who was introduced in the first film, it is back in
the
this
first film.
The
first film being Phantom Menace.
Yes.
Right.
That he is revealed to be a villain. Is that accurate?
That is accurate, yes.
Ah.
Yeah, and
wow.
If you're willing to talk in more detail about it, I'll absolutely talk about it. But, yes.
Let's just say it's someone who we thought was one of the good guys. And I'm not talking about Palpatine.
Okay. Who anybody should know is not
sure.
A good guy.
And I can tell you if you want to know or...
Let's keep it. I'd rather not.
Yeah, I don't want to ruin it for others, but I mean, just in the fact that I have heard this information, and if you can confirm that at the end somebody is revealed to be...
Absolutely true.
Because I think that goes against the spirit of what this is supposed to be about.
I agree, Tom.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay, well, thank you for calling.
Hey, no problem.
Great. Let's take one more call here. FMU, you're on the air.
Hi, I have one question. I understand about the Fett clan in episode 2. Will there be a resurgence of the Greedo clan?
The Greedo clan only appears, I think, as peripheral characters, and they serve the Hutts in this film. But no real major characters, mostly just sort of henchmen.
Oh, just like little Rodians, no Greedo
exactly.
Himself?
All the Rodians are just, they're just henchmen.
Oh, that's stupid.
Okay.
Thank you.
Great. Thanks for calling.
Thank you.
Well, let's. Why don't you just, if you could fill us in on that? We were starting to talk about the DVD information,
right?
Which.
So as I said, what's going to happen next is there's a lot of clamoring, not only for Phantom Menace, but obviously for the original trilogy.
Mm-hmm.
And I will say this: there was just released a DVD version of Francis Coppola's The Conversation.
Yep.
You probably know about this, Tom.
Well, I know it did. It just
an audio commentary from Coppola.
Yeah.
Where he does it. Coppola is starting to do that with his films, and I think he's finally, for the first time, gotten Lucas interested. So I think we have in the works a major trilogy DVD release with audio commentary from George Lucas and a few other principals involved, but mostly George.
Wow.
And I think also some of the treats that we've been teased with over the years, i.e. deleted scenes, restored to their former glory. The famous big dark lighter scenes that appear on some of the CD-ROMs in a fuzzy work print form, you're going to see restored to their full glory.
Okay.
There is talk of a Star Wars New Hope thing that completes the first reel of the film as it originally appeared, which, if you're familiar with the novelization, follows that verbatim.
Wow. So that this would be a full-out production, these DVDs, they would...
This is going
They'd
to
make
be
it a real nice package.
The ultimate collector's edition.
Okay.
Ultimate.
Mm-hmm.
Ultimate.
Wow. And I guess you were mentioning, you know, you've been mentioning Francis Coppola, and the it's interesting how the two of them, Lucas and Coppola, have shifted role of kind of like a student and teacher throughout their careers, where, you know, Coppola, I guess, gave George Lucas his... He came and saw Finian's Rainbow being filmed. You know,
that's
he's
right.
On the set.
You know what? I'll give you this one last bit of information.
Okay.
That sort of ties into that relationship.
Okay.
And I'm glad you brought that up because it's very interesting. Francis Coppola makes an on-screen appearance in episode 2, Veil of the Sith.
Wow. See, that I guess that would just be the... That makes it kind of full circle, I guess, because, you know, it... And it just let me finish my point. Just that... You know, and then I guess it flipped over in the 80s when Lucas was flush with success and Coppola was kind of on the skids when he was doing, The Outsiders and not having the most, you know, kind of having to move outside of his vision to make movies that made money.
Right.
And then Lucas produced Tucker. So then Lucas was kind of the parent in the relationship. And then now it's interesting that now, you know, 10 years later, that Coppola is kind of spurring on the artistic side of Lucas once again.
Well, let's hope that's the case.
Mm-hmm.
Let's hope that's the case. But I don't know how much more I should say at this mm-hmm. point. Tom, maybe we can do this again. I don't know what.
I would love to do this again. I'm sure the callers would.
But I felt like your show was good because it was radio. I could get the information out there. If you weren't listening, you won't get to hear it again. And mm-hmm. so it's sort of an interesting sort of thing where, you know, hopefully there's something traceable.
I guess people can get it on the internet if they're listening on the internet,
it's cool that they can hear it as it's broadcast uh-huh. on the internet.
And the shows end up being archived at the station's website, which is WFMU.org. You can always hit the archives.
What does that mean?
It means that this show will be saved for people to listen to. I think they get saved for 6-month increments that people can check and listen to any show.
Our conversation tonight is archived?
Well, this show is going to be archived, absolutely.
And what does archived mean exactly?
It means somebody can go to it and click on it and then listen to it.
That someone can click on at any time on your website and listen to this show?
Yeah, that's part of the...
Tom, I can't do that.
I mean, we kind of archive everything on the station. I mean, it's really almost...
Okay, but... I mean, maybe it's a conversation that we should have later, but that can't, the whole reason of doing this was just so that it isn't a public forum, but it's just like on the radio once and then it's gone. You can't archive this.
I understand. Look, I understand what you're saying because because you're putting yourself.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, it can't, and we'll have to talk about that.
I mean, you didn't give your name out, though, and
at the very least, they're going to have to digitally alter my voice or do something, but it cannot.
See, but that's just impossible for this
day.
I mean, it's not a.
I mean, again, Tom, this is a conversation we should probably have off.
Okay,
here,
we will have this conversation at we'll have this conversation after the show wraps up. But I
trust that you'll do the right thing because I mean. I have gone out mm-hmm. on a limb.
Absolutely, and I tell you, I appreciate really it, and I know my audience, just based on the amount of calls we received, they appreciate it, but, I mean, we will sort this out later, okay?
Yeah, but I have to, we will talk off the air, but I just
absolutely.
I have to reiterate that it just can't, because there's
let's talk about this later. Let's talk about it later. Okay?
Okay, but I just, you know.
Okay, I understand your point. We'll talk about it later.
All
right. Well, thank you very much for calling, and I know everybody appreciates the stuff you gave us. And happy holidays to you. And I will talk to you later. And
I should talk to you later tonight. Then.
Well, we'll talk later. We'll talk after the show.
What time is the show over?
It's over in about 25 minutes.
Okay.
Okay. Great. Well, thank you very much.
Okay, Tom. But I just have to reiterate that we gotta.
I fully understand where you're coming from.
Okay.
Okay. Thanks.
Okay.
Bye. Wow, that was interesting. Why don't we get back to the music real quick? Here is something.
The Best Show is produced in partnership with the Forever Dog Podcast Network. The show is hosted by Tom Sharpling and features John Worster, Michael Lisk, Jason Gore, and Pat Byrne. The show is produced and written by Jason Gore, Pat Byrne, Michael Lisk, Brett Davis, John Worster, and Tom Sharpling. The Best Show is executive produced by Tom Sharpling, Brett Boehm, Joe Cilio, and Alex Ramsey. Co-executive produced by Jason Gore and Pat Byrne, segment producer Michael Lisk. The show is engineered and mastered by Andrew Gleason and Wesley Knapp. Graphic design, video editing, and social media by Brett Davis. Website and technical support by Martine Sellis. And the show is recorded at Forever Dog Studios in Los Angeles. Support The Best Show on Patreon over at patreon.com/thebestshow. And follow us on YouTube, Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok at Best Show for Life. That's Best Show #4 Life. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.